One writer who has had enormous success writing fiction that's full of science is Andrea Barrett. Her short story collection, Ship Fever, won the National Book Award, and she's recently published another called Archangel. Many of her characters are scientists, often 19th century biologists, and Barrett herself has a degree in biology. Steve Paulson loved the new book.
Andrea, the thing that immediately jumps out about these stories in your new collection is that they're all about scientists from various different periods of history. Why do you like to write so much about science?
It's two things, I think. One is just simply I'm interested in it. I'm a crummy scientist myself. I had thought when I was young I would be one, but in fact, my brain doesn't work that way at all. But the guiding impetus for a lot of scientists I do share, which is simply wonder at the natural world, marvel at it, how did it come to be? In addition to that, which a scientist has, I have something that lies over that, which is sort of how do people get to be in this state of wondering at the natural world? What is it that drives human beings to be so interested in these processes? Why do they ask these questions? And that, as a fiction writer, really interests me.
You said that you once wanted to be a scientist, but you were, what did you say? You were a crummy scientist yourself.
I really was. And my brain so doesn't work like that.
How does your brain work differently then? Because I mean, obviously you're fascinated by the subject matter of what scientists do, but I guess the actual, the act of doing science doesn't quite work for you.
Yeah, the act of doing science day by day is actually boring to me, meticulously doing the same experiment over and over again. I like watching the people who are doing the experiments, and I like listening to their gossip. I think the way my brain works is almost in the opposite direction. If I'm good at anything, it's at putting things together that are not usually put together rather than taking things apart.
Now, I've certainly read other literary fiction that delves into science, but almost never with the kind of scientific detail that you go into in your stories. I mean, science is not just a backdrop for you to create a little atmosphere for your characters or your plot. The science itself seems to be central to all these stories, especially moments of scientific discovery or certain moments in history when a young scientist is challenging the old scientific orthodoxy. Are those the kinds of things that especially interest you?
They are, and that's really what engenders the stories in the first place. Again, this is sort of embarrassing. The conventional wisdom for a fiction writer is that we're supposed to start with our characters and everything else is secondary to that. And by that wisdom, science should be in the background, not the foreground. But truthfully, it is my interest in certain areas of scientific history that tends to start a story. I will get very, very interested in the idea of the ether of space and trying to figure out how someone believed that at all, how they could believe it for so long, how they could believe it post-Einstein, post all the evidence. And then something in me will begin to produce characters who could be in that state of curiosity and wonder. But it is actually the science that sets me down the path.
That's fascinating. So actually to start with kind of an abstract detail, sort of this debate over, you know, was there ether in the atmosphere? And somehow you turn that into a fictional story.
I know that's a sort of inversion of what we expect, but I would also say it's not an abstract detail in that sense. It's not an idea, what is the ether of space? It's an image related to that idea. So it's an image of, in this case, these gigantic whirling machines made of iron that Sir Oliver Lodge used to whirl past each other in a way that would tell him whether ether existed or not. It's a drawing of that. It's always something sensual, something I can see or feel or touch. It's jellyfish pulsing in the ocean and a line drawing of a gigantic jellyfish from the 1870s. That image leads me into the idea, and those two things together lead me to the characters and the story.
Well, I'd love to get a taste of how you write about science. And I'm wondering if you could read a passage, and I'm thinking maybe from your story called The Particles.
Sure. The Particles is a story that goes back and forth through time from 1939 when a middle-aged geneticist is involved in the sinking of a ocean liner that he's on. It was the first ship sunk by a German submarine in World War II. But in between accounts of that time, he's looking back over his life, and we're looking back at how he was trained to be a scientist. And this passage is when he's first in college. He's a 16-year-old freshman in college. So this is him listening to his teacher and processing all that. Axel was young himself, just a few years out of graduate school, energetic and delightfully informal. When he discovered Sam's age, he laughed and said genetics was a young man's game. Alfred Sturtevant had been only 19, still an undergraduate, when he'd devised the first chromosome map. Calvin Bridges had been an undergraduate, too, and a bottle washer like Sam, when he spotted the first vermilion mutant. Who knew what Sam, the perfect age at the absolutely perfect time, might do? Theirs was a new field, Axel said, a whole new world. In class, Axel brought new terms and concepts alive with his arms, slicing the air like a conductor, his thick air sticking up in spikes. They were after more than just the study of vague factors or mysterious unit characters, he said. The gene was not simply an abstract idea. Genes were material. Heredity depended on chromosomes, forever splitting and recombining. Every living individual had two parts, one patent visible to our eyes, the me you see, the tree you touch, that was the somatoplasm, and the other latent, perceptible only by its effects on subsequent generations, but continuing forever, part of an immortal stream, that was the germplasm. Phenotype, genotype, Sam loved repeating those words. So Sam couldn't swim, so he hated his history class. When he listened to Axel talk about his work, now their work, he was entirely alive.
Oh, that is such a lovely passage. I have to say, one thing that strikes me is that I'm guessing a lot of writers would sort of be scared to go into that much detail about science in a work of fiction, the fear being that you might lose your readers along the way.
You know, I do worry about that, but there doesn't seem to be anything I can do about that except to just trust that if I'm curious about those things and I'm interested in those things, then other people are too. You know, one thing is the science I write about isn't science that's done right now, which actually is too hard for me.
Well, and it's the history of science, really, that is your subject. And each of these chapters is set in a particular moment in time. In fact, you have the date at the beginning of each story. Why so interested in the history of science?
Again, it feeds into understanding what we understand now. And it's also the case that the history of science, any example that we choose will have adhering around it all sorts of theories that were equally popular at the time but have since been proved to be wrong. And that also really interests me. It gives us a feeling for what in our own lives that is put forth as truth might also be wrong. It makes us, I think, more usefully skeptical about what we're told to believe in the world now.
Do you do a lot of research before you write these stories?
I do a lot before and I do much more during because I always start the stories with an idea of what they're about. I have to. You have to start someplace. But I'm always wrong, and sometimes I'm wrong, you know, by a continent and half a century, and I'm not kidding about that.
Do you read histories of these periods, or do you try to go back to primary documents?
Letters, photographs, a lot of visual material, drawings, even paintings. If I'm working with a scientist, as I was with most of these, I like to go back and read the textbooks that they would have read when they were young. All that helps me build a character.
You know, I'm guessing a lot of people would say, you don't have to do all that research. I mean, you're writing fiction. You're not writing history here.
You
could fudge the details and
I know.
People wouldn't notice. But obviously you care.
I do care, but I know that those people are right. I spend way, way too much time doing this, and so it makes me a very slow writer. Each of these five chapters or stories took better than a year to do, and you know, there's a level on which that's just silly. Why don't I just write it already? But my imagination is somehow put together such that I can't write them unless I am fully at home in that world, and that's different from knowing just a few background facts. I have to absorb enough material thoroughly enough that I can briefly experience the world and feel the world as my characters feel it.
Now, I'm curious, do you collect scientific artifacts from the past?
I do. My house is a disaster. It's, you know, I have a lot of old books, an anode from an old X-ray crystallography machine, and a lot of fossils and bones and all objects collecting dust every day. And do I dust? I do not.
So why? Is it to, I don't know, somehow have that visceral connection to the past?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to hold in my hand what Henrietta was holding in her hand. I want to, you know, if she's going to feel a jellyfish, I want to feel a jellyfish. If someone else is going up in a biplane, I want to go up in a biplane. I do need to feel and touch and experience those things as my characters do.
Andrea Barrett talking with Steve Paulson. She's written 8 books, including Ship Fever, which won the National Book Award, and her most recent collection of short stories is called Archangel. And this is more music inspired by science, a track called Music is Math by the electronic duo Boards of Canada. I'm Anne Strainchamps. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International.